You are now listening to the Friends of Rugby podcast. Relax your anus. Balls. Thick thighs. Camille Schacht. Where's his neck? Eddie Jones. You're fucked, mate. We're nice now.
All right. We are recording. We're live.
All right.
Hello, friends.
Hello.
You are listening to the Friends of Rugby. If you didn't know from our intro or clicking on the, the little icon to start the podcast.
Yeah, we are what we say on the tin. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Hungover again.
Again.
Yeah.
Partied hard.
Yeah, a little bit. I'm old though. I had like 5 strong beers and that's enough. That's enough for me. Yeah.
Yeah. That's, well, I had, you know, 3 light
had
beers.
A little thimble of whiskey and now I'm feeling poorly.
No, I'm all right.
Yeah. Just stuck with the beers.
Mid-tier hangover. I'll be all right by about 5 o'clock.
Yeah. If you stick with one drink,
yeah,
you should be fine.
I'm not going to say. Who has one drink?
No, like one type of drink.
Oh, yeah. I did do that.
You start getting to dangerous territory when you start mixing the drinks.
Yeah, you do. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the problem is as well, a lot of beers these days, the fancy can artwork beers, they're all like, fucking 7%. It's ridiculous, yeah. Mate. It's like drinking a pint of wine.
Yeah, it's like 12%. You're drinking this beer, like, fuck, yeah. This beer's like, yeah, fucking me up.
And you get like immediately buzzed. Yeah. It was a good time, though.
I remember when I was really young, I went to a party and I didn't want to, like, I was like, oh, I don't really feel like drinking.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know anything from anything.
Yeah.
So I go into the liquor store and I buy a box of wine. I was like, oh, I'll buy wine. Girls drink wine all the time.
They're fine.
So I like pound back. I'm at this party and I'm pounding back this box of wine. Like I'm holding it under my arm like a child.
Like a bagpipe.
And like I'm drinking it right from the bag because of the bag inside and stuff.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I just get mangled.
Yeah.
I'm in the bathroom and I'm like spinning and I'm like, oh, yeah, God. And I just like, well, I left. I walked home before like my pants came off or anything like at the party or totally
made
a mess.
You shit yourself or something embarrassing.
Yeah, I just like walked home. And
that was probably smart.
I was just spinning the whole time. Like I just had no idea. I can still drink wine now pretty hard.
That was the right call though. Fair play to you for having some judgment, you know?
I try to like not have any regrets the next day. I'm really, I take it hard.
Me too. I cringe at myself all the time.
There's nothing worse
it's
than like
horrible, isn't
wake
it?
Up in the morning and you made an ass of yourself all drunk and shit. Like it's like, oh fuck, what did I do?
I think I was one beer away from starting to be a bit of a pain in the ass. Yeah. So.
Yeah. I've got good. Yeah. Or if I drink like hard alcohol too, like I'll go to jail. It's like if you get me on tequila, I'm probably going to jail. I'll do something like fucked up. Like I was like, oh, shouldn't do this.
Yeah, I switched to whiskey once and it was like the worst month of my life because I like, you know, I was like starting fights and just being a piece of shit to everyone. And I was like, what's wrong with me? It's like you're drinking 40% alcohol all night. That's what's wrong with you.
Yeah. And I hate hangovers.
Yeah.
You're just wasting
it.
When you get older, like, it's like, oh man, you can't like just drink all night and then wake up and you're like in bed all day.
I have no serotonin for about a week. It's rough.
Yeah.
It's horrible. Yeah.
But
I'm okay. Don't worry. Yeah. So, but rugby happened.
Are you going to say the date?
Oh, yeah.
If you gotta say if you don't say the date, people are going to have no idea.
I think we'll lose a lot of...
Where they are in the timeline of the world.
Yeah. It's the 24th of March.
The 24th of March.
A beautiful sunny Sunday. Yeah.
What is this? Episode 15?
I don't know.
I think
you said that as if you already knew. It sounds like you're setting yourself up to tell me.
Yeah, I think it is episode 15.
Right.
I'm pretty sure it's episode 15.
Yeah, you're probably right.
15.
That's a lot, eh?
That's like 15 weeks in a row.
We haven't missed one.
No.
No. We're reliable, though, aren't we? We're pretty neurotic, reliable types. So,
if you people at home like the podcast, share the shit out of it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
We're doing that
right
here.
We don't say the like and subscribe thing.
Oh, okay. Like and subscribe.
Yeah.
Smash the like button.
Smash that like button and make sure you subscribe.
Yeah. Have we got Patreons?
No, we're not even close to Patreon money yet.
All right, whatever.
Getting that sweet Patreon money.
I'm quitting my job tomorrow, so we
I don't know if I'm ever if we'd ever get into the Patreon thing.
Why not?
Oh, it's kind of weird.
I feel like I don't want to do any more than this either. I'm not making extra content for fuckers who pay me more money. Like, I'm just not doing
it's
it.
It's just
so.
It's a lot of work. The people that have the Patreons, that's like their full time job stuff.
Yeah. No,
that's
fuck
in the
that.
Territory.
I've got no interest in that. Also, you know, we're getting ahead of ourselves. We've probably got like 9 listeners. So
I've got way more than that.
All right.
We're up there.
All right, into the high teens.
Actually, this month's been pretty high.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
All right.
We'll but yeah, like, make sure you guys share the shit out of this podcast.
All right.
Yeah.
Cool.
So should we actually start talking about some rugby?
Yeah.
Because it's a fucking rugby podcast.
It is, yeah. Yeah.
Let's do some, I think we should do some review and roundup of the Six Nations first.
Yeah, I'm excited to just go straight into talking about the Six Nations. Now it's finished. The dust is settling. I've thought about it. I'm less depressed.
I'm kind of sad.
I'm not.
I missed it.
I loved it, but...
Was this consuming your life?
No, I did not enjoy seeing my team lose 5 times in a row. By the end, it was a great tournament, but by the end, I was just like, I'm just sick of watching Wales lose.
Oh, yeah, I forgot you're emotionally invested.
Yeah.
Into a team.
You are, but in a different way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway,
it's
I'm just...
part of your heritage and your blood and shit like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, if we're gonna round this up, let's you want to get into the team? You want to do the team of the
Let's do our team of the tournament
per player. Oh, look at that! You actually wrote notes down.
Why would I not?
I thought you were gonna get in. Can you turn that down?
Turn what down?
Your computer. It's doing all these kind of things.
Can you relax?
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll do in the team of the tournament.
Yeah. Let's do the team of the tournament. Your fucking computer's screaming
all right
at us.
You're gonna start with.
I'm going to start with...
Let's start with the forwards.
Yeah, let's start with Loose Head.
No, well, that's 3.
No, fuck off.
Fuck's
I know you're fucking with me. I know you're fucking with me.
All right, fair enough.
Loose Head prop number 1. I'll start with the number 1. Who did you have?
I went Uini Antonio.
That's a tight head.
Right, I went Cyril Bai.
Isn't that the hooker?
No, oh, wait, yeah, no, he's a prop.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just fucking me. I went Cyril. Look, I've got it in my notes. I am joking.
Oh, yeah, look at that. Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, you chose him.
Yeah, I did. I thought, my reasoning was, France's pack was so dominant, and it was hard to pick a single French prop, to be honest, but I think he was just consistent, didn't give away a lot of penalties, and he was always there when France were fucking marmalizing scrums. So, just a classic scrum killer, you know? Wasn't too flashy around the field, but I'm thinking of other props. There were some other props, and I'm thinking Loosehead was a bit more of an argument for that, but I just went for the classic strong tight head prop, you know? Winning scrums. How about you?
Oh, you know who I went with.
Tyke Furlong.
No. I went with Andrew Porter.
Right.
You're still drunk.
Maybe.
You're still fucked up. Him playing, he played like fucking like 120 minutes each game.
He was class.
He's
actually
valuable.
He is valuable, isn't he? He was
relied
class
on a little bit too much.
Yeah.
Because you basically have a senior citizen coming in to like back him up.
Yeah.
Maybe that, but man, he's playing top rugby.
Yeah.
For 70 minutes a game, every game.
I've got buyer's remorse now. I think you're right. Yeah.
And he's hard as fuck.
He is a hard bastard.
The thing
he?
Is, like, I'm worried, like, they're going to overcook him.
Mm.
Like, how many minutes he plays, even in the URC, like, his timeline is going to be pretty short. I'll be surprised if we see him, like, he'll probably get to Australia for the World Cup.
Yeah.
But I'll be surprised if he makes it after that.
Oh, he's going on a Lions tour.
He's going
on a Lions
for
tour.
For sure.
Next
he's
year.
On one. Yeah, yeah. Oh, for sure.
Yeah, first name on that sheet, actually.
Mm-hmm.
In that position. Yeah.
Who did you got for hooker?
Dan Sheehan.
Yeah, I did too.
Hard to argue, isn't it?
Yeah.
Really hard to argue. Just because of even if you don't even look at him as a hooker, 5 tries in a tournament, like, that's impressive for a forward. So, yeah.
Yeah, he kind of chose himself. I don't even think there's anyone close.
You know, with my biased Welsh glasses on, I actually thought Elliot D was really good because he was contrasted with Ryan Elias, who was having a shocker. I don't think Elliot D missed a line out, which for a Welsh line out is pretty impressive.
Oh, man. I should have looked at more stats between these guys, actually.
But Dan Sheehan was better, 100% better, because he was in a winning team. I just think Elliot D is worth a mention. I picked Sheehan, though, 100%.
I think Sheehan has the most tries for a forward in any Six Nations, also.
I would not be surprised if that's true.
Like,
yeah.
He broke. Yeah, he's, oh my gosh.
Do you know who else was good? It was Theo Dan for England.
Okay,
he,
yeah.
He when he came on, he brought so much energy and he was class, but he was a backup hooker, right? He wasn't the captain. And Jamie George was good, but I think when Theo Dan came on, I was like, if he was starting games, I might have picked him, you know, if he was played more rugby.
I think you can almost even argue to choose Jamie George too for hooker of
he was good,
solid,
and he was a good leader as well, right? He was
I thought
quality
he did a good
leader.
Job at the end of the day, you know, yeah. people were kind of questioning him. I thought he did a decent job being captain.
Yeah.
He filled that role really well.
He did.
Okay, how about tight head prop?
Ty Furlong?
Did you?
Yeah.
You chose Ty? Why is that?
I think in the same sense that I had to give something to France for their scrum dominance, I had to recognize Ireland. I've got a bit of buyer's remorse now. I kind of wish I'd done this the other way around. I kind of wish I'd done Porter.
Because I think you feel jealous.
You did a bit, to be honest. Points. Yeah, you did a bit. But no, Tyke Furlong was good. The thing is, he was good and he was solid. And like Ireland are always going off a solid forward platform, and he's a big part of that. He's not as good as he has been historically, but people are saying Ireland was struggling at the scrum. I didn't really feel that way in many. You know, they had a couple scrum penalties against them. I never felt like they were getting pushed around though.
They've never had like they've always had what's the word I'm looking for? Not like a reliable scrum.
You're saying they all have always had a reliable scrum.
They've always had, like, ever since I've been watching them, they've always had a reliable scrum.
They have, yeah.
You know, I've only seen them, like, really dominate in the scrum a couple times.
I would say in the last 2 years, Porter and Furlong have been a part of a dominant Irish scrum, as opposed to, as you said, an adequate Irish scrum. They've really revolutionized that front row, right?
Mm-hmm. Like, you're not going to expect... I never really expected Ireland, when they're playing, to get dominated at scrum time.
No.
They have struggled, but then they've shorted up in the game.
Mm.
I've seen them struggle a little bit in the scrum time.
Yeah.
Especially when they played South Africa the few times. They kind of like got a little shook.
Yeah.
Especially when they swapped out when South Africa brought the bomb squad in.
Yeah.
But then they, within 20 minutes or 10 minutes, they settled in.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's interesting given that I think their backups are not nearly as good as their starters. Like Kean Healy and Finlay Beelam, good as they are.
I think Finlay Beelam is class.
He's good, but he's a bit of a step down, isn't he?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
I don't think so. The way he's playing, like you can almost make some arguments. Like sometimes I feel like he has better games than Furlong.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
He is getting up in the age, though. They both are. I think they're both around the same age.
Late 20s.
Yeah. So that's, thank God they have Ollie Yeager that came in because he looks good too.
Well, he just got injured.
I know.
Yeah.
They have, Munster has a bad issue with like signing guys and then
immediate.
Yeah. And taking some
barbecue
injuries.
Accidents.
Yeah. Barbecue burns.
Although RG Snyman was class on the weekend, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. Against Ospreys, he was good.
Yeah. I didn't watch any URC this weekend.
That's fair.
Yeah.
We got a bit of a rugby hangout. Well, watch rugby though. Anyway, we'll keep going.
I chose Dan Cole.
I wrote it down and I crossed it out.
Really?
I did. Hang on. But I mean, I wrote him in the wrong position as well, but I did do that.
Yeah, Dan Cole for me was class this tournament.
He rolled back the years, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
Yeah, his dark arts powers is great.
Yeah.
Without him and Marler on that team, like it could have been a very different Six Nations for them. They needed someone like that.
Those two don't go away, do they?
No.
Dan Cole and Joe Marler, they just do not stop, do they? Fair play to him, like I don't know what they're doing, what they're feeding him.
Dan Cole, like, just, he's relentless on the field, too.
Yeah.
Like, he's in the mix and everything. Mm. I thought, like, I was really impressed by him.
Yeah.
The Six Nations.
Yeah, me too. He was
like,
good.
I don't know when he's going to stop.
Well.
He looks so good. I was like, this guy could go, I'm like, could he go to an Alliance Tour?
I think they won't take either of them because there's other experienced props.
You take Joe Marler, Dan Cole.
Mm.
They come on for Porter and Furlong.
That's a meaty.
That is a meaty.
Yeah, that is a meaty proppy situation.
Or you can have, you can mix the two too. You can have like Porter and Dan Cole's playing and then they could switch off for Marler.
Joe Marler and Tyke Furlong. Yeah. Oh, that's nice.
Like you have a mix.
That's a prime rib buffet, that is.
Really good props that can do some damage.
Like you said though, a wee bit old. But that's, do you know what, props are the one position where, like, if they're playing well, who fucking cares
how
old they are?
Which is super surprising for how physical they're demanding their position is, and they can keep going.
Well, they get better as they get older. That's
the because of their skeletons calcify. There's no movement in their bones anymore, so they're just like these
hard. As long as they can hinge at the hip, they're good.
Rock hard people.
Yeah, yeah. They just oil up the hips before a game. Yeah.
Let's choose locks.
I went for an all-Irish lock situation.
Oh.
Yeah. So I went, I'll tell you both of them.
Yep.
I went Tyke Byrne and Joe McCarthy.
Ooh.
Yeah. About you?
I went with David Jenkins.
Really?
Yeah.
He didn't even play lock a lot.
Yeah. And Byrne.
Tadeusz Burns hard to ignore.
He is inevitable. Would say he's one of the best players in the world.
I would agree in his position. Yeah.
I felt that way
for a long time. I feel the same way I feel about Justin Tipperick, about this guy, right? Like, he's an undersung best player in the world. He is the best person in this position, mm-hmm. and people forget about him. I'm like, how do you forget about this guy? He makes stuff happen in every single... He's like Quagga Smith as well for me, right? Like, Quagga Smith will come on, win two turnovers in the space of 10 minutes, and people still don't talk about him like he's one of the best in the world. Tadeusz Burns just... He hasn't needed to change the game because Ireland have been dominant, but when he's on the field, like, he just makes stuff happen.
He rocks, he jackals,
yeah.
He scores tries.
He does
he's
everything.
He's great in the lineout.
He is, yeah.
He's just... There's nothing wrong about it. He tackles.
He's a great mall defender, and he strips balls really well as well. You know, does a lot of good stuff.
In my eyes right now, he is the best rugby player in the world.
Rugby player? Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Definitely
it's
up
disagree.
There. I know it's subjective.
Of course
but
it is.
Like,
positionally, yeah. But yes.
And it's a big argument, but if I had to, like, if you asked me personally,
yeah,
I would probably put him down until someone convinced me of another player.
if we're saying best rugby player, I'd want someone a bit faster and more dynamic, but he definitely does a lot of technical forward-based stuff. Incredibly well, better than anyone else.
Because if I had to choose a lock
definitely the best lock in the world in my
opinion.
Or
a loose forward.
Yeah.
Like he's first on my team sheet out of anyone.
Yeah.
I want him above anyone else.
Imagine aliens invaded and they brought a team and we could make a world 15. I think Etzebeth and Tadeusz Burns as locks. Like, they're immediately who I would go for, you know?
Yeah, I think those two, you'd I'm even like, you can even debate which one's better because they're both so good. You can go in a different debate about who's the better lock.
Yeah, you could.
Like, I don't know. Who would you think is better between the two?
Tadeusz Burns. But Etzebeth is stronger, more powerful, but I'd still take Burns because he does every other skillful forward thing, stripping, line out,
yeah,
more
the
defense,
tools.
The tools.
He's got
yeah.
more
His
tools.
Tool belt is immense.
I went with David Jenkins.
David Jenkins. That's an interesting... Why? Tell me about that, because
well,
I'm trying to avoid
David
being
Jenkins
biased.
Was also a defensive machine.
Stats-wise, he was incredible.
Stats-wise, he was machine, and what he had to work with and how good he played.
Yeah, that's true. There's a couple of Welsh guys who their stats are incredible, and you think, considering they lost every single game, that makes it more impressive.
I don't think he missed a tackle. In the Six Nations.
I know he tackled a fucking lot.
He has the second most tackles in Six Nations.
It was number one. Do you remember?
Yeah, it's Lamaro.
Right.
Yeah.
Who did did I put him in my team? maybe I did. I'm going to show you my notes to prove I'm not fudging things. But yeah.
But I was super impressed with David Jenkins. He played his heart out.
Yeah, he did.
And to lose every game and still go out there and give it 200%.
Yeah.
You're going to pick that guy in any team.
He's got heart. There's about three Welsh players who I just think played their fucking socks off and deserve more of a mention. But I don't want to seem biased, though, because, you know, we didn't win a single game. So
who is your loose forwards?
Yeah, so I got Andy Christie at six.
Okay, good.
I actually do have Michelle Lamaro. Seven. And I crossed Tommy Rafael out and put Michelle Lamaro in, and I'll tell you why in a minute. And number eight was Ben Earl, and that was probably the easiest pick of the whole team.
We went pretty similar.
Yeah.
Because I picked Tommy Rafael.
Yeah.
And I picked Ben Earl.
Yeah.
And I picked Lamaro.
Oh, you did? Oh, okay. Yeah. That's interesting, because I thought mine was about left field. Because I thought Andy Christie was... Every time I watched him, I was just so impressed with him. But you might say there were more consistent sixes in the tournament, or sixes in teams that were winning a bit more, right? Like David Jenkins. Well, no, not David Jenkins. He didn't win a single game, but...
Tommy Rafael and his stealing and his jackley. He kept Wales in the game.
I think it was the most turnovers.
Imagine if he wasn't there.
It'd be, yeah. Yeah.
It would be like...
There's a couple of players like that.
More dire.
I just want, for Rafael, for me to... get that over Lamaro, he would need to have more of an attacking threat. Because a seven for me needs to have more of an attacking threat, right? But yeah, no doubt, incredible jackal.
I just mixed them up. I just picked the best loose forwards.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And Ben Earl had he's an impact player.
He's amazing.
He stepped, he really made sure, what he did, he made sure everyone knew who he was.
Yeah.
In the Six Nations. Like, yeah. If you're watching the Six Nations, like, after, yeah. Everyone knew who Ben Earl was.
Oh, yeah.
When they were playing England, like, he was just, he was dynamic.
He was a psychopath.
Yeah, he was a psychopath. Just he's
frothing
a
at the
psychopath.
Mouth.
Yeah.
Reminding me of Ardie Surveyor's performance, yeah. Is actually just powerful.
Yeah, and ruthless. Yeah. And yeah.
Just not giving up, real bulldog energy, you know?
I'm not willing to, like, compare them though, like they're two different. Yeah,
that's happened before when people were talking about Tom Curry. He's the next Richie McCaw in the English media. Yeah. Like, he had a good season. Calm down. Like, yeah, and I haven't seen him. Scenes.
Like, that's a big. Yeah, those are big shoes to fill.
Exactly. Same with Ben Earl. Class tournament, yeah. And he has been. English fans have been shouting for him to be picked for a long time, and yeah, they were right, and Borthwick was wrong. But you know, now he's right because he picked him. But he should have been there sooner. Makes you wonder how. Zach Mercer would look in an England jersey, right? Like, because he's a similar player. Like, he's not your traditional, just run straight at him. He's got a step on him.
Even,
you know?
Having him as one of the Lucys,
yeah,
I thought would have been pretty big too.
And now England is starting to look more like an attacking team. If you had Zach Mercer and Ben Earl in your back row, like, that's a pretty dynamic, attacking-minded back row.
Alfie,
you know?
Barbary too.
Oh, yeah.
He's a good attacking.
Yeah. He's got that same power, hasn't he? Yeah, yeah. So
and Lamaro, let's talk about Lamaro.
Let's talk about Lamaro. Yeah, like, I think
he's a hero.
Stats wise, like you said, most tackles,
103 tackles
in an Italian team where, for the first time in my life, I can say, wow, they defended well, mm-hmm. And he was key to that, right?
Yeah,
so that's impressive for a start. A lot of turnovers, and it felt like he's fast and mobile, right? He is a true seven, you know,
just consistent every single game.
Yeah, is he a seven or am I talking shit?
No, he's a seven.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, no. That's the loose. Let's go to the backs here.
Yeah, you go first. I'm
for number
the
nine.
Defender. Yeah, go nine. Tell me 9 and 10.
I picked for 9 and 10. Mm-hmm. I picked Jameson Kitson-Park.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, he was just.
Yeah.
And then for 10, this was tough because I could have went with a lot of guys.
Yeah.
But I put Jack Crowley.
Fair enough.
I picked
solid tournament.
I picked Jack Crowley not because he was the best 10. I picked him because. The shoes that he had to fill in that position was so immense, and he did it, and he felt like he didn't miss Johnny Sexton at all. And to do that, I thought was super impressive. And he was good. Every game he played good. There was something he started off shaky in a couple of games.
He was a bit nervous, wasn't he, at the that France game.
But he grew into every game, and yeah, he was solid. Like, he didn't miss Sexton at all.
No.
And I thought there was a lot of eyes on him. There was a lot of pressure on him.
Yeah.
Because everyone was comparing him to Sexton and a lot of doubt probably.
Yeah.
But you did not notice Johnny Sexton was not there. They were almost sometimes people were thought they were. I heard people say the team looked better without Sexton.
I've got something controversial to say about this. I don't think Sexton's impact on the Ireland team was as big as people make out, because him leaving, obviously he was an amazing player, right? No doubt. But I think Ireland, by the time he left, had such quality in every position that the idea that he was carrying that team or was, you know, adding an extra 20% to it, I don't think that was true.
It was his leadership. They had the thing, but he corralled all the guys. And
he did. And he added speed to the game.
And he kept the unity between all the players.
Leadership
on the
might
field.
Be the thing I'm not thinking about.
And that was because you notice a difference when he was on and when he was off the field in the last couple of years.
But I also felt like whenever Sexton had a bad game, Ireland would lose. Like, if he had a tantrum, like, they would lose. And
that's
it felt like
problem.
A liability
that
sometimes.
That was a big problem. Like, is he the team? Like, if he's having a bad game, the whole team's having a bad
game.
That's
what it felt like sometimes, right?
And I think that since he's gone. And crowd, like the whole, I think a lot of players are actually kind of coming out of their shells, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. But I think someone like Jameson Kitson-Park now, you know, one of Ireland's big strengths is just the speed of ball from the breakdown, right? They recycle so quickly and they have such a tempo in attack. And Johnny Sexton was important for that. You know, he threw in a real quick loop play when he got the ball. But I also think Jameson Kitson-Park has become the speed in the Ireland team now.
Yeah.
That recycling speed he gives them is what Sexton does. But he doesn't feel like as much of an ego as Sexton
does.
Yeah,
Gibson
Park,
and he can package up that ball and ship it out like
quickly,
like lightning.
He's in there, isn't he? And I feel like Jack Crowley feels like a real solid cog in that team instead of the movie star in the team.
Yeah, they're
and
really think, fortunate to have those two guys.
So I think, yeah, he's class. They're both good. But I think maybe Johnny Sexton's departure was a little bit overstated.
Who did you choose?
I've got buyer's remorse again now. I'm going to stick with my nine. I went Le Garrick.
Yeah.
Just because, similar to what you were talking about, like, DuPont's got some big shoes to fill. And I think France were a bit wobbly at nine. And then when Le Garrick started playing, it felt like who's DuPont, because he has such an impact on games, but they found their attacking flair again when he was there, because he added pace and rhythm to the game.
Yeah, when they got him and Ramos working together.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were some good operators, those two.
And I actually put Ramos as my 10. And that is controversial, even by my own standards, I think, because he's not very good defensively at times.
No, he can be a little shocking, especially because he's a fullback.
Yeah, that's right. And he's not even a real 10, is he? But no. When he was playing well, and like you said, that partnership with Le Garrick, and Ramos is a fucking Iceman as well. Like, he will just nail kicks wherever you need him to, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he does open up defenses. So that little combo for me in the last stage of the tournament was really impressive.
I thought another player too that we both could have picked. Probably you'll probably agree with me with George Ford.
Yeah, I nearly put George Ford. I felt like this wasn't such a strong tournament for tens, to be honest.
It wasn't a strong tournament for scrum halves either.
No, or fullbacks, which I'm going to talk about there as well.
That's true too.
So yeah, it's been difficult.
You want to go with the centers?
Centers, yeah. I put 12. I put Ollie Lawrence.
Oh, okay.
And then I had Ignacio Brex at 13. Uh-huh. Everyone's on this Italian center partnership hype train.
Mm-hmm.
It's impressive.
Yeah.
But I'm a bit cynical about it.
I put both the Italian centers.
Knew you would. Fucking basic.
I put Menoncello and Brex.
They were
because
good.
Everything that came good from that team,
it did come from them.
Came from those two fuckers. Even though Brex had the most missed tackles in the 16. Did you know that?
I did know that. Actually, and that's, I want to say something about Italy. They have been impressive, and they've made the tournament better by being good this tournament. But I don't like this narrative that this has been slowly building. They were shite in the World Cup, right? They were pretty shite. They've been shite for years, and yeah, they've had an amazing tournament, but I need to see them do it twice to believe. It looks like now they've got the players to do it. They've definitely got the defense, the attack, and they can stay in a game for 80 minutes. So as long as those two centers don't get injured, you know, the future's bright. But imagine one of them gets injured. Imagine Lamaro gets injured, right? Like, who's next?
I don't know. So, their under 20s looks real. If I think they're probably gonna start digging in those under 20s pretty soon too.
Yeah, and Benetton are going well. So yeah, I still like it a lot. I'm just saying I'm not quite on the hype train, you
because
know?
Without either of those two, I think those games would have been a lot different.
Yeah.
They created a lot of opportunities in those games.
Yeah.
And
even
though Brex missed a bunch of tackles too, the most tackles in the Six Nations, he's also like top, I think he's like 15th or 16th for most tackles.
Yeah, so. Well, that's a hard... 13 is a hard position to defend as well, you know? Mm-hmm. It really is. I played 13, like, it's horrible because people are running at you. They've got a lot of space, right, to get some speed up. But no, I was really impressed by him. That's why I put him there. And I put Ollie Lawrence there because when England feel like they're having a bit of a center identity crisis, and I feel like when he played... And against Ireland, he was class, and he was class against France as well.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately for Ireland. Yeah.
Yeah. He even had a good game in France. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. So, yeah, he's been class. So, yeah. Wings, fullbacks.
Yeah. Let's do the back three. I went with James Lowe.
Yeah.
And Damien Penault.
Yeah.
And I went with Winnett.
Me too. Exactly the same.
You went with exactly the same?
Exactly the same. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to pick Winnett.
No, because we had a talk about this the other day. I was saying this was not a tournament for fullbacks. It was hard to... Because it wasn't like they were bad fullbacks. Like, Hugo Keenan was great. He just didn't play enough rugby for me. I think, like, both Stewart and more so Furbank had a good tournament, but they didn't play enough games. Basically, every team didn't consistently stick with the same fullback except Wales.
Yeah.
Cameron Winnett, I want to see him attack more, but those stats don't lie, right?
No.
Carries, unreal. Mm-hmm. Meters made, unreal. Like, for a kid who's barely played for Cardiff,
he's
going to
be a star in the future.
Yeah, if he can unlock a bit more attacking threat, then yeah, he's going to be class.
He's also got to grow into his body a little bit more.
He looks like an anemic child. Yeah, doesn't he
does. His face looks, he's got that pale, sick boy face.
He's a little Victorian anemic boy.
He's just been eating potatoes in a fucking dark barn.
Yeah, he probably has. That was his childhood.
Yeah, he loves looking anemic.
Yeah,
it's like, man, someone should check this guy's iron. Like,
yeah, totally.
I went with James Lowe because, like, every game he was great.
Again, the stats don't lie, do they?
Yeah, no, they don't lie. He was all over the stats. And Penault, it's like fucking
greased up wild pig man going for it. Yeah,
he's class. Fucking amazing.
He's untouchable, isn't he?
He might even be the best, one of the best players.
Yeah, well, people say that. People say he's the best player in the world. Yeah,
like right now, there's always that always changes, like, you know, whatever tournament's going on and stuff. But right now, like, him and him and Byrne.
Yeah,
yeah, they're definitely up there.
I wish we could do a Lions team that included France, because that would be silly, wouldn't it? Like,
that'd be too powerful for the world.
We'd break the world.
Be too powerful.
Yeah, it would.
Imagine having that dynamic.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be crazy.
That would be mental. I think one thing I want to mention, though, is Van der Merwe, because me and you were arguing about who's better, Lowe or Van der Merwe, and I was trolling you a bit just because Van der Merwe had more tries. He fell away in the last two games, though, I feel.
He's just one of those guys that if he doesn't, like, you have to create things for him, kind of. Like, he has to get, like, the luck of the ball, or you have to get the ball to him.
In space.
Yeah. Like, he's dangerous as fuck.
He is.
But, yeah, like, I just always kind of made that argument about him that he's just, like, not... when you compare him to someone like Lowe or Pinot...
Not consistent.
Like those guys go out and create things.
They do.
And they work fucking hard around the field.
They're entrepreneurs.
I'm not going to say that Van der Merwe's lazy or anything, but...
No, he's not.
Yeah,
he's more of a classic winger, isn't he? Stand there, wait for the ball in space.
Yeah.
Yeah. But when he does get it, it's like, holy shit, look at this guy.
Yeah. If he gets the ball, you're fucked. Especially if he has any kind of space.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's taking some field with him.
That's right.
Yeah, he's gaining some ground.
It feels like he's fast and strong, but I feel like Pinot is he's fast and strong and smart.
Mm-hmm.
And slippery. And greased up.
Yeah, they must grease him up.
100%. You can't tackle him. People just slide off him. Like,
he's definitely like... Before he walks out there, they're just like slathering him with fucking grease.
It's like a ritual, mate. Everyone has a turn, like rubbing some lard on his knees.
Because like, he's a slippery motherfucker.
Then they slap him on the ass. Go get him, Pinot.
Who was your player of the tournament?
Okay. I'm going to say, because we're going to do player of the tournament and breakout player as well, right?
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you both at once so I can give you a little reasoning for it, all right?
Okay.
So I put my player of the tournament. I actually put Ben Earl.
Oh, okay.
And I can already hear you saying fuck off or something. But I wanted to have Joe McCarthy in there as well. So I put him as my breakout player. And let me explain. Ben Earl just felt like the difference between England looking like they didn't know what they were doing and them being a dynamic attacking threat in the last two games. Like, he, for me, was the sole difference.
Yeah.
And he was a real... Not fine, because he's been around for a while, just not picked in the England team. But it's like, finally you've picked him, right? The prodigal son has arrived. And England feel like a changed man with him there. But then I was thinking about Joe McCarthy as well, and he was so good. And to keep... Ireland have good depth at lock, right? They really do.
Yeah.
And it, like, for a guy who's young to come into the squad and just be like, I'm not going anywhere now. Like, I'm your first choice pick every time now.
He took that position from a lot of senior guys,
exactly.
Too.
He just whipped it right from out. He's not going... As long as he doesn't get injured, like, that's his fucking shirt now, right? Mm-hmm. So he was... So it was kind of like they're both similar vibes to me, but I feel like Ben Earl's been around a bit longer in terms of, you know, playing good at club level for him not to be a breakout player. But they both impressed me a lot. So that's what I did.
Wow, you kind of went out there. I wasn't expecting those two.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who'd you go with?
I went with I have buyer's remorse now. I went with player of the Six Nations. I went with Pinot.
Mm.
He just topped all the charts and the stats.
Yeah. Yeah,
like, he has the most offloads, defenders beaten, try assists, line breaks. Like, he's just top in the charts and everything. Like, this guy was the player of the tournament.
He was class. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, France were a wee bit shit at the start, though, weren't they? So.
Yeah, but even when they were shit, he was still creating things.
Yeah, that's true.
Even when, like, the whole system was just collapsing around him.
Yeah.
You know, he was trying.
One guy without a World Cup hangover, anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I thought he was just... immense every time he played.
Yeah, fair enough.
Breakout player of the Six Nations, I went with Cameron Winnett.
Really?
Yeah.
Fair enough.
He was just no one expected anything of him.
No. There was no pressure at all.
And like this guy, when I first saw him walk on the field, I was like, he's fucked.
Yeah.
I saw this guy, this kid, he walked out, he had his peanut butter and jam sandwich. He's eating
little Thomas the Tank lunchbox.
Yeah, a little bit of jam on his cheek. And I'm just like, this kid is fucked.
On socks.
And he played his heart out. Oh, man,
He didn't drop a ball. I mean, he did drop one ball that Sam Costello tried to steal out of his arms. You know, like, except for that, like, he was just solid, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He was solid.
He was very impressive. And he was that if he wasn't on that team, there was a few players in that Welsh team, if they weren't there, it would have been different. But he really held that. I couldn't think of any. I guess there's like really no one to challenge him for a fullback. Maybe Lloyd.
Yeah, hard to say.
But
hard to say.
When it was class, he was every good, game. Yeah. You could easily choose Joe McCarthy.
Yeah.
Too, but fuck, win it.
Yeah. I'm glad you're repping the Welsh because I wasn't.
I repped a lot of Welsh actually today.
Yeah, considering we lost every game. That's kind of you.
Did you choose coach of the tournament?
I did.
Who did you choose?
Gonzalo Quesada.
I chose the same thing too.
And I've got some thoughts about this as well because I'm going back to my slightly cynical thoughts about Italy where...
You're just mad because you fucking lost.
No, genuinely not. Like I'm really genuinely happy they won that because they've made the tournament interesting for me and I want to watch Italian games. And all of a sudden, I know 5 or 6 Italian players' names more than I usually do, right? Because before it was like, I know Paolo Garbisi, I know Andrea Capuozzo, I know a couple more, but now it's like I know most of the team.
You do. That's the difference. You know, like how we were talking in the... When we first started the podcast... And Italy would come up. We'd barely talk about it, would we?
We
didn't know the players.
We were dismissive about them 6 months ago. It's like, who fucking cares?
And now these guys are like in our mouths.
Yeah, and they're exciting to talk about, right? So no, I'm not. Yeah, it was sad to lose to them, but I'm genuinely happy. And to be honest, Wales needed that. We need to hit rock bottom so our fucking union wake up.
Yeah, Gonzalo.
But he was.
He filled us with Italians. Filled our brains and minds.
You know, like what he's done immediately is I've thought this for a while. Is like what Argentina have is what Italy should have and probably aspire to have, right? You know, less resources than other unions, not a traditional rugby country. Well, I guess Argentina is, but, you know, not so many professional rugby players and turning that into more than the sum of its parts. And Italy are doing that under an Argentinian coach, which I don't think is a coincidence.
I read some things from Garbisi and they asked him what's the difference between him and Kieran Crowley there.
Yeah.
And he said that Quesada is... like Crowley would give them a lot more freedom, let them kind of do whatever they wanted more.
Yeah.
And Gonzalo is like
Gonzalo.
More, yeah, Gonzalo is like more controlling.
Yeah.
He's more
disciplined. Which is evident.
And it's like what that team needed.
Yeah. 100%.
Right? He's look, you guys are doing this.
Yeah.
And we're failing here.
Yeah.
We need to be doing this, and this is how we're going to play. This is the system. So he's kind of playing more of a structured game for them.
I wonder if there's something to do with having a closer cultural connection, because for too long, Italy have had English-speaking Southern Hemisphere coaches, and there must be some kind of cultural disconnect there. Now there's someone who's like the Latino fires here.
Wasn't our last coach before Crowley, he was an Irish guy?
Yeah, I think so. What was he called?
I forget.
But do you know what I mean? Like what I'm getting at?
Yes,
like it's
okay,
a bunch of like white European... Well, I know Italy's in Europe and they're white and stuff. But you know what I mean? Like they've got the Latina Fuego coming in now. You know, like that's what they needed, I think. And someone who is not just, you know, a second-rate Italian coach who's stepped up. It's like this is an established world coach from Argentina, right?
Yeah.
They have pedigree. He's been in the trenches duking it out with...
Gonzalo used to coach the...
The Juarez. Oh, the Jaguares.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Jaguars.
The Jaguars when they were in Super Rugby there and brought them to the final.
Mate, and they put up a fight against
the
Crusaders.
I'm kind of surprised with when you look at his resume too, that he wasn't, he might have been, I don't know this, but he wasn't in the Pumas setup at all or being talked about as the head coach. I don't know. Or maybe. Yeah.
I don't know. Well, it's checking now, isn't
it? When I checked it, I didn't see anything Pumas related.
Yeah.
In the thing, so I was kind of surprised about that. So maybe like a little bit of a slip up from the Pumas there, or
maybe they can't afford him. Maybe, but this is great for Italy. This is exactly what they needed. And like I said, you were talking about Squidge gaslighting us, like Italy are going to be good one day. And yeah, he was right, but I don't feel he was right in the way that he meant. They weren't slowly building. They were shit 6 months ago, right? They really were.
Yeah,
they were anonymous.
Yeah,
and all of a sudden they're good. But let's not kid ourselves. They won 2.5 games. Right? It's not the best tournament by anyone's standards.
Yeah, but they could have...
They could have won three.
They could have won three. And if they would have played that game again against England now, I guess like because England were kind of all shaky and...
I don't think that... I think if they played that again and England got a chance to play again based on England would win again. They would. But so you can't do those hypotheticals.
They could have beat England. I'm just saying that.
They could have.
They kind of got gassed out by England.
Yeah.
And they should have beat France.
Yeah.
If there wasn't that fuckery going on.
Yeah.
They could have almost had 4 games this tournament.
They almost did. But what I'm saying is, you know, hypotheticals aside, I don't think they serve us too well. If they can back that up next Six Nations, then I'll believe. But I'm really happy with what's happening.
Because now I want to watch them. Summer with their summer games.
Totally. Totally. And, yeah. They've got to back it up now. There's pressure on them to perform now, right? Where there never was that much before.
I think there's some belief going on there too, though.
They seem more confident all of a sudden, don't they? Yeah.
If they can take a big scalp in the next year,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
Like,
because they've taken scalps before, but it always felt like when teams were on the lower ebb. When they beat Wales last, this tournament and a couple of years ago, felt like that's when we were shit.
Also, when
they
beat
South Africa, they were shit.
And Australia too.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were kind of all over the fucking place.
Yeah, totally. So, but to beat a Scotland this is the best Scottish team anyone's ever seen, supposedly, that's a hell of a win. To beat Wales in Cardiff, not the best Welsh team, but in Cardiff is a big deal, right? And yeah, I think like that's that France game, we can kind of ignore it and say, should have won that.
And who was your dream, like who was your darling team of the tournament?
It would have to be Italy.
Yeah,
it would have to be Italy for all the shit we've just said.
They made the Six Nations exciting.
Made Six Nations great.
They kind of healed it a little bit.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, you'd always have that dud game.
Yeah.
Where you're just like, oh, Italy's playing. Okay, I'm not even going to watch it.
It's a bye week game.
You wouldn't even watch it.
No, I wouldn't.
You're like, oh, especially like for us that have to get up early to watch games.
I wouldn't even watch the highlights, to be honest.
No, because you already knew the outcome.
Yeah.
Now, they're like, oh, they're a team. They're coming.
Yeah. Good. It's awesome.
And you want to watch them, even if they don't become like this, like a really good team. To kind of stay where they are.
Yeah.
You're going to watch them regardless because they might pull an upset.
Yeah.
And you want to watch that.
Yeah, 100%.
Right?
And I know the player names now.
Yeah, you know the player names now.
Yeah, things have changed overnight. It's great. Yeah.
Game of the tournament.
Game of the tournament. Can you go first? Because I've got two in my head and I want to see what you think.
I picked fucking England, France.
No, yeah.
That game was a fucking rock show.
It was such, and I say that because I didn't really have a horse in that race. I just enjoyed watching a fuck of a game.
It was good rugby.
Yeah.
There was a lot of drama.
Yeah.
Which I liked.
Yeah.
Yeah, the back and forth.
Yeah.
And you had two teams that had really shaky, like they both kind of had similar Six Nations.
They did.
Really shaky starts.
Yeah.
And grew into the tournament. They were trying to figure out what the fuck they were and what they were doing. Yeah. And they both kind of found that right at the end.
Yeah.
And that was a game.
I wish we could see Ireland, England, France play each other again now. You know, when with all the learnings. Because the other game I was thinking about was the Ireland-England game. But it didn't feel the same. Like you've said rightfully, Ireland were kind of in control of that game more than people are letting on, right? Because the narrative seemed to be, wow, England are amazing. They dominate. They didn't. Like Ireland were winning for most of that game, right? And yeah, it was close, but it wasn't the back and forth of that England-France game.
No.
So yeah, I will go England-France for my favorite game.
What was the other game you're thinking of?
That one, England-Ireland.
And what you said you had two games in your mind.
Yeah, England-France and England-Ireland.
Oh, really? Yeah. Those two?
Those two where I was tossing up in my head.
Think about the England-Ireland game. It was messy. Like, there was a lot of mess in that game.
I enjoyed it, though, because it changed the narrative of the whole tournament.
That you know what game I thought was better than that one was Wales-England.
Wales-England? Really?
Oh, man. Wales kind of got robbed. And the last few minutes of that game too.
Yeah,
They almost won that game.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you can argue that they should have won that game.
Maybe, I don't know. I don't know. It didn't feel as exciting.
I can't remember what the call was, but there was some shitty call at the end of that game.
Yeah, there was Rio Dyer getting pushed into touch in the air, but we'd already lost that game. Yeah. I think.
No, there was room. There was hope. I had hope.
Yeah, you did. You did.
And I think that concludes the 2024 Six Nations.
Yeah. Yeah, next year.
Off our backs.
Have you put your decorations away yet?
No, I haven't.
No, we'll leave them up till April, eh?
Yeah.
Remind us the
what
good
do you
times.
Think the rest of the year is going to turn out for these teams?
Good question. I think England in New Zealand is what I'm most no, that's bullshit. I'm most excited for Ireland, South Africa. Because
I'm like kind of almost equally excited for both those.
Those are my two favorite things that are going to happen. I'm so excited to see the chess match of mindfuckery between Rassie and Andy Farrell.
Oh, like, yeah, that's gonna
he's
so
going to have like laser pens onto the field and he's going to have like a drone that's dropping supplies onto the scrum or something weird.
He's going to like have the water guys like in like disguises.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're going to have like grass ghillie suits on and appear at the turf or some mad shit. There's going to be some kind of fuckery. So yeah, I'm excited for that because not because I'm buying into this who's the best team in the world thing. I couldn't care less. I think it's the, I think it's just such a titanic. It's going to be.
It is a tight. It's Clash of the Titans.
It's Clash of the Titans,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's Clash of the Titans right there.
It's the South Africa Bowl. Yeah.
I can't wait for that. I think like the England-New Zealand game too is going to be really good because you don't know like what is coming out of New Zealand.
That's right.
Because they could.
That's right.
Like they could like fucking, like England could show up, that whistle could blow, and then New Zealand can just fucking eat them alive.
Yeah.
Or lose.
Yeah.
Or. Like, it could be a tight... I have fucking no idea.
Yeah, because South Africa, Ireland, right? It's the Clash of the Titans. We both know what weapons they're coming with. England, New Zealand's really exciting for me because you've got New Zealand with Scott Robertson on one hand, but you've also got New Zealand with a bit of a shaky tournament and their top team's not performing and their stadium's not looking that full. So they're a real unknown for me. They could either be incredible or maybe undercooked. And England have discovered this new attacking identity in the space of two games. Is it a flash in the pan? Like, that's a really cool narrative.
Yeah.
You know?
If you had to put money on it, though, like the way things are developing there, though.
I'd go New Zealand. Yeah. I'd put money on New Zealand winning.
Like, I think they're just going to, it's going to be a bloodbath.
I think they'll win both games.
Both ways. It's going to look stunned. Yeah, we didn't have enough time.
Yeah.
We got no time to prepare.
Yeah, we didn't have enough time. We could have won. We didn't lose. We just ran out of time. Yeah. We ran out of time. We ran out of days.
When did I lose that game? Yes, you did. I saw the scoreline. Yeah. Twat.
I'm pretty sure you lost that game. We just ran out of time. Fuck.
Shut up. I'm excited for it though. England could surprise people. I feel like if they lean into this sort of attacking game plan that they've got going on, then they could surprise people. Because when England beat New Zealand in the 2019 World Cup semi-final. That's still one of my favorite games of all time, just because like, the power they imposed on New Zealand for that first 10 minutes was electric.
Yeah, you just never seen New Zealand so shell-shocked like that. What? They were just like
Tua Lange was on fire. Yeah. Right? It was such a good game. And like, if they can do that, if they can like summon the emotional energy to do that, like, wow.
They might be able to shock them in the first game.
Yeah.
Like come out the gates just firing hard.
Yeah.
They might be able to do that, but like they're only playing two games against each other.
Mm.
So like... New Zealand can cope with that, but they might get shell shocked. There might be a bit of surprise, but I don't know.
A lot of what ifs though, right? That's what I'm excited about. And then the Wish.com tournament between Wales and Australia, also excited for it.
Yeah, that's gonna be that's kind of an exciting one
the
too.
The battle of the dumpster fires.
Yeah, because that's gonna put now I'm forgetting his name.
Joe Schmidt.
Yeah. In he's got to put his team together and. The Australians are playing a lot better now.
They do look better. Brumby's looking good.
Yeah.
Western Force just won a game yesterday.
Yeah.
So, you know, things are all right.
It was, yeah.
So we'll see. We'll see. That's another one of unknowns because I think Wales have, you know, our narrative right now is we've got the players. They just need experience and time. It's like, yeah, you've had five games of time now. We better win something. And I think Australia are just such an unknown, right? I don't even know what the starting 15 would look like. I haven't got a clue.
I'm kind of excited to see who's going to make it in there too.
Yeah.
Joe Schmidt's going to bring.
Does Rhys Hodges still play?
I don't even know. Yeah.
Don't even know.
All right. Okay. What other we've got on the menu here? Do you want to talk about some drama, some rivalry here? The new rugby rivalry.
Fuck's sake. Yeah.
Georgia, so we're talking Wales.
Yeah, I had some thoughts about this. So Georgia, like a mid-90s WWF wrestler, called us out. I'm calling you out, Wales. It just felt so... I understand Georgia's need to for exposure on one hand, and I don't think that's a bad thing. And also, this looks like a great PR move because everyone's like, fuck yeah. But on the other hand, there was like, the timing is kind of a bit...
Perfect.
Kind of immoral and shitty. It's like if someone got beat the shit out of in a bar and they're in a hospital in a coma and someone else is like, quick, get him while he's down. Let's go, boys. Like, and runs in with baseball bats and beats this unconscious dude. It's like, you called us out at our lowest ebb. That's kind of shitty, you know? So
I think it was great.
It's dramatic.
I think it was perfect.
If you're not Welsh, you're probably like, fuck yeah.
Yeah, because like Wales is in a position where they are kind of, they might be beatable to Georgia and... They are down.
It's like a lion there preying on the weakest animal in the herd, isn't
it? And Georgia, like, they're just, it's perfect because it's the, what's the word I'm looking for? The, you know, it's the Welsh stature, like it's their
pedigree,
the pedigree of what they are and what they've been, right? It's perfect because if you can call them out, get a game and beat them, right? That's the perfect team to call out right now.
And I feel like
because they're not calling out Italy.
No.
You guys think you're good now?
Or come Scotland? No. Who literally never won the Six Nations, right? Do you know what I mean? It's like
they want someone because they're like, yeah, we beat these guys. They have like 4 grand slams and blah, 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 right? Yeah. That's what they want. They're after the record. They're after the history of that team that's now like doing shitty.
Yeah.
So that's what they're really after. Yeah, because they ain't calling out Italy.
No.
They ain't calling out Scotland.
No, or anyone else.
No.
Right?
It's like, yeah, we want to take on Ireland.
Yeah.
Good luck with that question.
Yeah, exactly, right? So it just all feels a bit suspect and it feels a bit ungentlemanly to do that given our current state, right? There's teams in that tournament who've never won it and we've won it many times historically, which I understand is why they're doing it. They're after that pedigree, as you said. They're after that scalp. But it's like if they'd have done that 6 months down the line, I'd have been a bit more like, oh, that's cool, let's do that. But it's like immediately after the tournament, after we've been handed our ass in most of those games, like, come on.
Ideally, I would like to expand the Six Nations.
Yeah.
But in reality, there's not enough time.
It's never going
to... too many games.
It's never going to happen.
Yeah, it's never going to happen. Like right now, the Six Nations is the Six Nations. Yeah. It's going to stay the Six Nations.
Even if we didn't talk about the fact that they're all part owners of the tournament, and financially speaking, it would be suicidal, adding another game to it, including another team, just totally shits on all this talk about player welfare and safety as well. It's like, cannot have another game in the international window. It's jam-packed, right? These players are fucking exhausted. Leave them alone.
It's just there's not enough time.
There's not enough time, right? And I wouldn't mind actually relegation and promotion, but the unions involved wouldn't do it. It's financial suicide.
The only thing I can think of is like, let's say you expanded the Six Nations and you added like Georgia.
Yeah.
Let's say you even added Georgia and South Africa.
Right.
Now you get 8 nations.
Okay.
You couldn't do it in one go.
No.
It would have to be like there's the Six Nations and then in the summer you'd play the other fixtures.
Yeah.
Like it wouldn't be the same.
Yeah.
There's not enough time.
Yeah.
It's too many games.
Yeah.
It is what it is. And it's their own tournament. And you know what? Like Georgia has their own tournament.
They do.
And there's some big countries in that tournament.
And I felt like, who is it? Richard Cockerill, is that in charge of Georgia? I felt like him saying we're too good for this tournament.
They might be.
They are too good for that tournament. They win it every time, right?
Yeah.
But the fact that is, if you don't want to be in it to encourage the growth of these other teams around you and you just want out, you're as bad as those Six Nations teams who are snobbishly going, we don't need to play you.
They
right?
have an opportunity to build something where it could even be like a rival thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They have the countries, the population, they have the countries with the money too in that tournament to like build something big where we can be like, oh, because what's it called? The European Championship or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah. They could be like, oh, we're better than the Six Nations, blah, 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 right? Because like, you know, they're packing stadiums, they're having these massive games.
Yeah.
Right. So if they built that product up, right, they wouldn't even need the Six Nations.
No.
Right. And you'd have fans watching both.
Yeah.
And you'd have fans engaging and talk about, oh, yeah, maybe they should have a one off game of champion versus champion.
Which,
right?
which I think would be cool.
Yeah.
And, you know, just to reiterate, I do think relegation in the Six Nations would be a good thing. Like, I really do. But they just wouldn't. It's like turkeys voting for Christmas, right? The Six Nations teams would never do it. But if Wales got relegated, went to the European Championship, played a game in Germany or something, and they brought 20,000 Welsh fans with them, immediately, overnight, the profile of rugby is raised in Europe. It would be an amazing thing, purely for the number of fans that travel and bring a financial lift
but
to those countries.
It'd be financially devastating for Wales, though.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It would never happen. I would say it'd be great for European rugby, terrible for that nation that got relegated, right? For the prestige. But like I'm saying, it's like Italy have lost this, and Scotland have lost it 4 or 5 times since Wales have last got a wooden spoon, you know, 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be devastating for both of those teams if they had been relegated at any point.
It's never going to, that tournament is what it is right now.
Yeah.
It's going to stay that way.
Of course it is. And like the idea that this is some meritocratic system, or it's never been that. It's a prestige tournament. It's just a standalone tournament for these 6 teams to get together once a year and have a good old time. Like I told you, it's a rugby festival, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's not a league. It's not about merit. It's about having a good time with rugby.
Yeah.
And if you want a piece of that pie, fuck. Well, you're not. Fuck off. Yeah. Sorry. Like
you go. You already got a pie.
Yeah. Go make your own fucking pie.
Make
right.
Make that pie good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stop calling out a crippled, comatose victim. You know, but like, we're calling you out.
Because I would like to have all those countries in one tournament. Like I like to have the Six Nations as a big thing. But in the reality of things, it'd be financially devastating for any team that got relegated.
And they've got full control over it.
Too many
just
games.
Wouldn't do it.
When you think about player welfare and stuff, it's too much.
No. No. Neither situation is going to happen. So you're totally right. Georgia, if you think you're too good for that tournament, do what you can to build it up yourselves, right? You know, they haven't really got a professional teams in Europe, so they've got the Black Lion, but they need to build that up more first, right? It takes a long time and it takes a lot of money.
So this weekend, for the past few weeks, you know, we've been hyping up some Super Rugby because it's been looking fucking very competitive.
Yeah.
So we're looking at these scores.
So we went.
We're watching highlights.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
We're like, fuck, this league is picking up.
They've taught my boy Reese Patchell to offload.
And then we saw
that
there was finally some games on that were on at a decent time for us to watch.
Friday night, we got a kebab and some beers.
Yeah, we did. We got Friday night lights going and we sat down and we watched some Super Rugby. And what the fuck did we fucking watch?
Jesus.
Holy
I think we've been gaslit. We've been gaslit.
I was like, what the fuck is...
Yeah. So we watched Drua and Waratahs, right?
Which was the fucking most wild, chaos...
Sweaty, knock-on fest.
I was like... It was like the Wild West of rugby.
It was. The ref was just like ignoring murders on the field.
Yeah,
and things.
The ref was just like, fuck it.
Yeah.
And the players are just like, fuck it.
Yeah.
And
can you please put your knife away, sir? Like, it was fucking wild.
It was almost like anything goes.
Yeah.
Like, oh, man, what a fucking...
It was funny, wasn't it?
It was comical.
It was like, comical. Yeah.
Some of the tackling was just fucking brutal. Like, guys are just like, fucking like, nah.
Yeah.
Whatever. Like, like not getting in front of the players, like just grabbing guys their arms and guys sliding off, missed that fucking drop kick from the Waratahs.
The last 10 minutes was particularly hysterical, wasn't it?
That drop kick from the Drua too, I swear to God, it wasn't a drop kick.
The ball did not touch the ground. He just open hand toe punted it through the post.
I swear to God. And the ref was just like, fuck it, you know, we've been here.
I'm tired. And it went into extra time. We were sat there and they were like, why are they still playing? Why are they still playing?
Screaming.
And then we look up and it's extra time? What the fuck?
Like, we're just like fucking looking at it and like the amount of penalties that like the Drua kept piling up and the ref's like, you don't want more time. And there's just nothing.
I might even think about getting a yellow card soon if you keep doing this. Like
the first as soon as the first play too, there was like this blatant high tackle. Nothing. Like, okay, play on. And you're just like, what the fuck?
It was mental, wasn't it?
It was a disaster of a game.
It was mental. It looked boiling as well. It looked boiling and sweaty. When it was an extra time, everyone was just, their shirts were just clinging to them with sweat. They looked knackered.
Yeah, the extra time thing was weird.
Oh, that was miserable.
I was just like, hey, like, give these guys a break. Just
they look fucked.
Yeah, they're already dead.
And there was like these Australian ginger guys just absolutely dying in that
skin. They're like, white skin's just burning up.
Oh mate, that was wild. But you know, if we're talking about it more objectively, right, Drua, they're all absolute monster humans, right? They're all massive dudes and they had this really healthy lead and I thought like, oh, this is going to be a good win at home in front of a Fijian crowd, like fair play to them. And then for no particular reason, they were like, we can't be fucked with this winning bollocks. And just like Waratahs just like came back by about 20 points. Like, and I was like, how do you not defend that lead?
They started piling up the points.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy fuck.
How the fuck did they do that?
Like, the fitness. Like they were like, if you look, both those teams looked like they were dying on that field.
Oh, it looked miserable, didn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was the contrast. The most amazing thing too is like you finish watching that game and you're like, holy shit, like this is Super Rugby.
So we sat there shell shocked going, what was that? And then we tune into Highlanders Chiefs, didn't we?
Yeah. And then that game, the quality picked up in the rugby was like,
that was very high quality rugby to be fair.
It like picked up significantly. It did. You're like, okay, okay.
Yeah. This is why Kiwis are good at rugby, right? Because you know, you could just see the set moves, everything was well rehearsed, crisp, clean passing. Really good connection between the backs, right? Damian McKenzie was, you know, tearing it up. Like, so we enjoyed what I think what was disappointing for me about that was the size of the crowd a little bit, you know? And don't get me wrong, I'm a Welshman. I know what a small crowd looks like. But for that to be like, you know, the national sport, everyone loves it. I'm surprised they can't get the full stadium there.
I thought it was like what the camera was facing the more empty side of the stadium because when they went in, and they showed the other half of the stadium, it looked pretty full on that
side.
I mean,
there's definitely thousands of people there.
Yeah.
You know, but when I watch
I know
rugby
they do
league
have
in Australia, Aussie Rules in Australia, which I know is a much bigger, more populated country, but Aussies pack out a stadium for their sports, you know? And it just feels like rugby union in New Zealand and much more so in Australia just isn't generating that passion in the crowd that I was hoping to see, you know? So maybe someone from New Zealand can educate me.
They
got to
be really
up.
Like, yeah. It did look a little bit like, the stands looked a little bit empty. And I think it might have been more of a camera work kind of thing.
It just felt like for the best rugby country in the world historically, a kind of half empty stadium lacking passion felt like out of place. It felt like a quiet atmosphere, right?
I felt, yeah. See, for me too, like some people just like, a lot of people like watching games at home.
Yeah, and I do.
Like,
I do.
You know, we have an NHL team here.
Yeah.
I watch NHL.
Yeah.
I would rather sit at home.
Yeah.
Than and watch the game.
Every day.
With some friends and drink pie at home.
Yeah.
Then go to a game. It's just, it's expensive. You have to like get out there.
Yeah.
The crowds. Yeah. And everyone gets like so fucking wasted at those games and they're fighting and shit.
Mate, and it's going for a piss all the time for me.
Yeah.
I hate it.
Can't get the bathroom.
Like, I don't want to have a beer in a stadium because I know I'm just going to have a piss in 10 minutes and it's going to be a nightmare. I'm going to miss the game. You know?
That's what I did in France.
Yeah.
The bathroom situation in the stadiums in France were pretty dire too.
Just pissing the ashtray in there, isn't it?
Yeah, and there was like not enough toilets and they're just packed and you're waiting. So I almost like, I was like, oh man, I shouldn't have another drink because I don't want to fucking take a piss and have to like
pay
go.
A lot of money for these tickets. Like every second is money.
Yeah, it's true. So, but wow, that fucking Drew game.
Mentally.
Yeah.
Fucking mental.
What a fucking chaos.
It was.
Pure
it was chaos
chaos
rugby, wasn't it? Yeah. Entertaining, but like I didn't really, if their jerseys had been, I wouldn't have known who was winning. Do you know what I mean? There was no sense of one team has ascendancy or one team has better shapes and structure. There was no narrative to it, right? It was just a fucking free for all.
It's the most wild
mental
game. We're lucky we watched the second game.
Yeah, we are.
Because if we would have shut down after that, we're like, okay, we watched the Drew's Waratahs and we shut that thing down. We're like, fuck.
Well, yeah, that's like, what they're on about.
What
Super Rugby.
The fuck? Yeah, we're lucky we watched the Chiefs fucking Highlanders. Yeah. And we're like, okay, there's some rugby here. Okay. Because that was just fucking insane.
It was mad, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I felt like Highlanders got up to a bit of a patch, like a bit of a shocker to start with, actually. Kicked two straight into touch from the start. And they just couldn't assert themselves, could they? And Chiefs just like took their opportunities. Chiefs looked like a real Kiwi team, didn't they? You know, whenever the ball got loose, got into the hands of Damian Kennedy, just sprint through a gap. And he's got the support lines of Kiwi players, man, is amazing.
That's what we were talking about when we were watching it.
Yeah, they're
like,
so
that's
fast
their,
and they
that's
support
the big
so
difference.
Well.
And whenever someone has a ball, there's a support
there's
player.
There's a guy there.
There.
Yeah.
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 Because we were like kind of questioning, we're like, man, it's kind of incredible how like this is like the teams that you know, build the All Blacks.
Yeah.
Because there is some kind of like odd things that the way they play.
The step up from their club game to their international is what we're always questioning, right?
Yeah.
It's like, how do they make that jump?
But when you're watching them attack.
Yeah.
And how there's like always a guy in the slot there.
And
ready,
as fast as you.
Yeah.
Right.
And the speed of the game.
The speed of it, yeah.
Yeah. Whew.
Yeah. No,
it's hot.
I would say like what I was saying to you, it's like the slowest Kiwi back is about as fast as a Northern Hemisphere back, right? Like the way they just punch a hole. And they've got a guy either side of them ready to catch, and they're all sprinting full tilt. And they could, if they get tackled, you know that offload's going to come off. What I was saying about Patchell is, you know, we were taking the piss about the Kiwi pundits going, I must have learned to offload in New Zealand. It's like, he was doing that in Wales, but the difference is when he was doing those offloads, a Kiwi can catch him.
Yeah.
A Welsh guy is dropping it in the rain half the time, right? So he was trying stuff, it just wasn't coming off. But when he tries it in New Zealand, it works.
Yeah.
Because his support players are that skillful, right?
Yeah, the attack is class. It's next level stuff.
It is, eh?
Yeah, it's like wizardry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed the spectacle of both games, and they were very different games. And I'm definitely invested more in Super Rugby than I've ever been. So I'm excited to watch a couple more. I'm in this time zone, it kind of works for us, right?
Yeah.
So I'm up for it. But fucking hell, it's a mental tournament.
Let's do our last topic here. Let's get into some the attack on our great game of rugby union, which I'm calling an attack.
Changing the law.
Changing the law.
Changing the law, rugby.
Yeah. There's some law changes in here that I agree
bullshit.
With.
Oh, okay.
There's some law changes I agree with.
Yeah.
There's some law changes I don't agree with.
Yeah.
That I think are very impactful.
Yeah. Jump, and we're going to go to Spiracy Corner today as well.
Oh, yeah.
I've got the conspiracy covered for today. Don't you worry. Let's talk about the law changes first, though.
Well, I'm just going to talk about the ones that I'm going to talk about the couple of ones that I, you know, the caterpillar ruck thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's got to go.
And it is. Okay, so I agree with the idea to get rid of it, right? And the way they're going to do that is by telling the nine to use it much quicker. The problem is enforcing it. And I think this was the same problem we had with when they started to have this 5-second use it rule, and it just was not enforced after a while. I'm worried this will be the same thing here.
I'm worried they're just going to add a bunch of clocks to everything. There's going to be clocks for this, clocks for that. It's a clock, clock, clock. Yeah. There's going to be all these timers for everything.
It's getting a bit Byzantine, isn't it? Yeah, but they will. If the refs can consistently administer these rules, enforce these rules, it'll work. But I'm cynical for now. But it's the right thing. Because you can't just say you can't have a caterpillar ruck, right? There's no. If you have one person going in to seal your ball, then you've got the nine coming in. Your ball is always in danger of being stolen if you can clear out the attacker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you need, if you can put a second player into the breakdown and a third player, there's no way to stop that happening, right? There's no way to stop the caterpillar, but you can prevent people milking it by giving your team more time to reset, right? As soon as a second player comes in to seal off the breakdown, it's like the ref is like, 5 seconds, go. Second player's in, got to kick it. So I'm hoping that's what happens, and I'm hoping they bloody enforce it as well. We'll see.
One I did not like is the maul. Mm. They're trying to get their grubby hands in the maul. So the maul, like, you get two stops, you have to use the ball.
Yeah.
Now they want to move it to one.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, the ball's a messy, dirty place.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, it's going to, you might get a stop, but you have to, like, guys are probably still setting up in that stop.
Yeah.
And I don't like that at all.
I agree with it in part because too often a team is given way too much time to set up their maul, right? So I think you should have two stops, but the time, you know, the amount of time it takes for the ref to call that's a stop should be much quicker. If the maul isn't moving, that's a stop.
Yeah.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? No ifs or buts. It's done. But if it's moving, you should still have two, I reckon, because a little break to kind of change the angle is fine.
Yeah, maybe call the first stop.
Pretty quickly.
Pretty quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Because if it's not moving right away, that's a stop.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's just about enforcing it. It's about being, the refs just need to be stricter in both cases, the caterpillar ruck.
Because I know like the maul is like a weapon a lot of teams use.
Mm.
The maul is also really hard to defend.
Very hard to defend.
Very hard to defend, but it's defendable. And teams do it all the time.
They do. And I think teams have recently gotten better at it. I just don't like that if you take a long time to get it set up. For me, that's bullshit, right? Because what is 15 other people on the defending team allowed to do while they're like rummaging the ball around in there like a fucking time bomb, you know? Fuck that. It's got to be moving and rumbling immediately for me.
Yeah.
So anyway.
I don't know. It's kind of it's kind of scary. Also, the new scrum law.
That one's bullshit.
Where they can like opt for a kick.
Yeah. So if you are allowed a free kick option after you called the mark, you could opt for a scrum. And now you can't.
Mm-hmm.
And you are not allowed a second scrum.
Yeah.
If it's a free kick, not a penalty, I think, right? Is that the way it is?
I think that's what it is.
Yeah? Something like that. But in both cases, you're basically saying we don't like the scrum.
It's putting a negative connotation on the scrum.
That's my big problem.
And like,
with
this
it.
Is part of the game.
It's a big part of the game.
And like, oh man, there was like 12 scrums in that game.
Yeah, good.
And they took up, like let's say, like each scrum took up a minute of time.
Yeah.
Or even a minute of half.
Yeah.
Like a minute and 30 seconds of scrum time per scrum.
Yeah.
Right? Like, why is that a negative thing?
I love it.
That's part of the game.
And if they collapse and we're talking about it and everyone's taking a little break and having a breather and a laugh, it's part of the fucking game.
Oh, there was like 20 minutes or 15 minutes of scrum.
I don't want 80 minutes of little guys running around each other.
Yeah.
And here's the crazy thing, right? The premise of the game, half the fucking team, the forwards, every position is named after their position relative to the scrum. One is propping up the scrum. One is hooking the ball in a scrum. One is locking the scrum. They're fucking named after the scrum.
Yeah.
You want to get rid of that? Like, you want this to be rugby league? It's like you were saying the other day, they want to turn it into fucking ultimate frisbee more than they want to turn it into rugby league. Like,
yeah, it's just wild. And it's really, when you look at this, it feels like World Rugby is targeting the box.
So now it's time to conspiracy hour, yeah, right? So here's the conspiracy, and I know this is going to... It's mostly intended as humor, so don't fucking go mental about it. I'm making a joke, right? But isn't it funny how New Zealand will trial all these laws, right? Yeah, we'll trial the 20-minute rid, see how it goes. And then, you know, as soon as they've done that, they go to World Rugby and go, this actually worked, let's try that.
It's kind of, it just kind of
it just feels like they have a monopoly on how the game should be played.
Yeah, because they who has lost some significant games because of cards,
yeah,
and being having a player taken out for the whole game,
yeah,
All Blacks,
yeah,
all of a sudden they're trialing a 20 minute red. Yeah, it's a 20 minute red. You're like, oh, okay, that's really, you know. Yeah.
And these law changes which we've discussed, not the 20 minute red, but these law changes we've just discussed, they disproportionately affect the Springboks strategies, right? That's they've weaponized the scrum. Like, if you can't beat them at the scrum, you can't win a game of rugby. That is it. The scrum is integral to our game. And if the Springboks are the best at it, they're going to win rugby games. That, for me, that's the fucking game of rugby. And if you don't like it, fuck off to league.
And
you know?
The weirdest thing, too, is it's not that, like, the box destroy, like, they destroy teams at scrum.
Yeah.
But it's not like they're destroying teams throughout the game.
No.
Like, they won the World Cup by winning a point a game.
Yeah.
By 1 point.
They were close games.
In three games in a row, they only won by 1 point.
Yeah.
It's not like they're like an extremely dominant team.
No.
Right? Like, they scraped by.
They've been innovative. Whereas historically, New Zealand will bring out these innovations in rugby and everyone go, that's so smart. South Africa do it and everyone's going, change the fucking rules. I don't like that. You know? And it's not like they've got bad backs. Cheslin Kolbe, Curtly Andrew, two of the best wingers in the fucking world. Are we going to forget they exist?
Mm-hmm.
And another problem I have with this is, let's say we're talking about kids getting into rugby and we say this is a game for all shapes and sizes. The subtext is you can play rugby even if you're small.
But you can play rugby even if you're a big boy.
Exactly. The other end of that spectrum is if you're a massive kid and you get bullied for being a bigger kid, like, I've got a sport for you, mate. You could be a fucking legend in the scrum. Mm-hmm. Are we saying we don't want him? Because that's what it sounds like.
You
want
to be a hero?
Yeah. Like, we can make you a hero. The fat kid on the playground is getting bullied. I'm going to make you a fucking rock star, mate.
Yeah.
We can do that in this game. And I love it for that, right? Mm-hmm. You want to get rid of that? Like, no. No, thank you. That's rugby league.
Yeah. It's scary because, like, you like love the game so much.
Yeah.
And you saw it in the MLR too, like they nerfed the scrum,
yeah,
with their laws,
yeah,
and it just not a weapon,
yeah,
yeah. You're gonna change the body size of the players.
You are,
because if the scrum becomes, because like I know like these that new rule is not gonna nerf the scrum,
yeah,
but it's that trickle effect.
It takes it away as an attacking threat,
yeah,
and I don't like that. The scrum should be a restart method, and it is, but it's also something you can opt for as a penalty, i.e. as an attacking weapon, yeah. And you take that away, like, no, I don't like
and
that.
And I don't like the fact, too, that they were bringing in, they're also mulling over the idea of having a clock for the scrum. Like, now you're going to rush these guys to, like, get into, like, how is that safe?
Yeah.
Like, it's two trucks.
Yeah.
Like smashing into each other. Like these guys got to get set up.
It's nearly 1,000 kilograms either side, right?
Especially after you've been playing 70 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to take a little bit for these big boys to get over there and set up. Like, but you got to let them set. Like, the power in the scrum is so immense. The impact is so immense. Like, you don't want to be rushing these guys.
No. Not especially not in the setup for a scrum, right?
No.
No, that needs to be carefully.
Because now you're going to have guys rushing over, trying to set up as fast as you can. And then you're going to have even more fucked up scrums.
Yeah. And so one thing I could see being safer for the game and increasing the craziness at the end, which I do like. I do like it when it opens up and there's lots of tries, right? Is I could have a conversation about the bench, right? And again, that would disproportionately affect this innovative technique South Africa have brought in. But let's not forget, other teams have tried to do what South Africa did, right? When Ireland tried the 6-2 split against England, it backfired because a couple of their backs got injured, right?
Yeah.
But when South Africa done it, it's worked. But let's not pretend it's like this magic bullet. It does backfire on teams. But if you want to talk about making the game safer and you want to talk about opening up a bit, just have less substitutes. I don't care if they're forwards or backs. Change it from whatever to whatever.
Or laws,
right?
on what kind of substitutes you can have.
Yep, exactly. You could say like it. All I'm saying is if you can bring on 3, 4, 5, 6 massive forwards, that is a bit dangerous sometimes, right?
Yeah.
Whereas if you could only bring on 3 or 4 and that's all your subs and they could be backs or forwards, all of a sudden the game's more open because everyone's more tired. And it's not making it dangerous. We're introducing 3 brand new, fresh beasts against a knackered front row, you know? because it is turning into a bit of a game of chess. It's like, when and how do you do these substitutions? I don't hate that. I think it's interesting, but there is a safety issue there, you know? But it's, again, if you did that, I'm certain it would disproportionately affect South Africa's innovative methods, which have been effective for them, right? So I'm not convinced by either, right?
Yeah, because like, I think the difference between the box innovation and, like, let's say the All Blacks.
Yeah.
Like, the All Blacks were really innovative in their, like, field, like, in playing in the field.
Yeah.
Right? So they were innovative, like, the way they attacked with the ball.
Yeah.
Right? How their offense works.
Yeah.
Like, that's where they kind of, like, changed the game.
Yeah. Their pod system.
Yeah.
And, you know, they'd start having, like, wing props and stuff. That was really cool, actually. Because they're bringing the forwards into athletic positions, you know?
And then where the box, I think, came in, too, besides their power, was they really were able to, like, look at the rules and be like, find some loopholes.
Yeah. But they weren't loopholes, though, were they? They were things you could already do, but everyone thought it was too stupid to try it.
Like, so using a fucking light. Well, like, you know, traffic light. And
okay, that was a bit, yeah, right? That was a bit weird.
The water boy shit. Like,
yeah, that was a bit bullshit.
Like, they really kind of stretched those things, but, you know, if it's there, it's there.
Totally.
Right? And if it was really detrimental to the game.
Yeah.
Like
we wouldn't be arguing about it if everyone thought it was a good idea,
and
right?
You got to be honest, like, too, like, you're not talking about, like, if the Springboks are just coming in and just destroying everyone.
Yeah.
Which they don't.
No, they don't. It's close games.
They win games because they're a really good team.
They do.
They win games because they're a really big physical team.
Yeah.
But they're not, like, just destroying everyone.
No, they're not mincing anybody, are they?
Yeah, like, it wasn't even before that, like, the All Blacks put them to town and In South Africa.
Yeah,
there.
They fucking hammered them last
they
year.
They hammered them.
Yeah.
Right? And yes, the Springboks hammered them.
Yeah.
I think that game was in England or something like that.
Yeah.
In the warm-ups.
Yeah.
But they're not this like ultra dominant team where other teams can't even play.
No.
Like, they're so, like, the scrum is so on their favor that the other teams can't even play rugby anymore.
No, totally. And if you look at their last two World Cup campaigns, like, England nearly beat them in that last World Cup. Mm-hmm. They were fucking a kick away from beating them.
Yeah.
Right? And the final, that was a close fucking game. And they did lose in the pool stages. The only team to have ever lost a pool stage game and won the World Cup is South Africa twice in a row.
These new rules, they, like, they really are suspiciously, it's really suspicious.
It, like, feels conspiratorial to me.
It does. Yeah. It's like, are you guys really, like, trying? Like, are you guys just like, really sour that the box are good at these things? It just looks targeted.
Yeah, it does.
At the team that won two World Cups in a row.
Yeah, and New Zealand have had their period of dominance. They won back-to-back World Cups, and everyone was loving it. And let's remember, they were dominant.
Yeah.
They were hammering teams.
Mm-hmm.
And they were good. And, like, I'm not complaining. That was fucking cool. Like, they were really good and innovative.
And you didn't hear anyone being like, oh, we should get rid of offloads.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. We should get rid of sick passes.
Yeah. You know? Exactly. It's like, no, you can't have a prop on the wing. It's not fair to the wingers. Like, no, fuck that. Like, they do what you want.
Yeah, leave the scrum alone. Yeah. If you don't like rugby union, you can go watch diet rugby, rugby league.
Exactly.
Less rugby.
Yeah.
Literally less rugby. If you like less rugby,
just
go watch league.
I genuinely want a sport where big fat guys and little skinny guys can have a good old time together. And if you take away the scrum, that's what you're doing. Reducing that. You know?
Amen.
Yeah.
Amen, brother.
All right. We preached.
We preached.
Spread some truth. Shine the light on the conspiracy.
Yeah. Well, but, friends, if you have any questions, concerns,
complaints, please.
If you need someone to talk to,
I got passionate then.
Yeah. You could email us at thefriendsofrugbypod@gmail.com
like
and subscribe and share the podcast.
We're on YouTube.
Help the community grow.
We're on Spotify.
We're everywhere.
We're in my house.
Yeah, we're in your house.
We're everywhere.
At 115.
shut up.
But yeah. All right, friends, you have a good night.
All right, take it easy.